Coming up, LinkedIn's new look, plus Instagram and Twitter are finally living in harmony, even more so than before, and how to combat social negativity. Here's some tips for you. Plus feed with a PH. Is it the next Twitter? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Land and Amber MacArthur, episode 82, recorded Friday, October 19th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media in a systematic way with Social Media Solutions from SAP. Learn more at sap.com/twit. And by Ford, featuring Available Sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Focus and at ford.com/technology. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Petaluma World Twit Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, on the east coast of Canada at a conference out here. And it's good to chat with you, Sarah. I'm finally in a different location. I was at home for a while in my little studio, but I'm back on the road. So coming to you guys from yet another place.
Now, what's the conference about that you are at?
It's really interesting. So this conference has gone on for a while called Pop Explosion, and it's been a music conference for about 20 years. It's a little bit similar to South by Southwest, obviously a lot smaller, but they just started to integrate and have the interactive side of things in the conference this year. So starting on Wednesday, they started the interactive conference, and that lasts for 3 days. And at the same time, there's the music stuff happening as well, the panels and everything. And at nighttime, there are great bands playing. So I've never been before, and so far it's been great. Great.
Glenn in chat says, Halifax, you can get a McLobster at the McDonald's there. Is that true?
This is probably true. I have not been to McDonald's to get a McLobster. However, I will say in many parts of Atlantic Canada, that is a possibility that you can get a McLobster. Pretty
really?
Funny. Yeah, I think it runs you about $9.99 if I'm correct. But the thing is, I mean, if you're going to have lobster on the east coast of Canada, you really want to go to a restaurant and have good lobster. I'm not sure the quality of the lobster at McDonald's quite as good.
Yeah, good point. Well, all right. Thanks for joining us from Halifax. Wherever you are, it looks great. You sound great. So it's good to be in the modern age of mobility.
Yes,
let's start with our first story. I feel like a little bit of a broken record. LinkedIn is always making tweaks to their service. Amber and I are pretty big fans of LinkedIn, so we're following what the company does. LinkedIn is coming out with yet more updates to their profile pages, although this is more of a complete overhaul rather than just a here's a new category, here's a way to give somebody some accolades. This is a sample LinkedIn profile. Well, I assume this is actually a real LinkedIn profile, but this is a look at what it's going to be like. I can't show you mine because I have asked to be invited to the new LinkedIn profile, but they haven't rolled out to everybody just yet. So we're looking at David Fleming's profile. What's interesting is if I hover over his initial section here, then I actually get a little bit more information about what the new LinkedIn profiles are going to show us. So this is where people quickly can learn about me, decide to connect. In this area, the activity area, here's where I can start a conversation, what I'm working on, things that are interesting, articles that I just read. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, huh, this sort of looks a little bit like more of a Facebook, a dynamic page that's living and breathing and changing all the time, that's exactly what I thought. Not that this looks exactly like Facebook, but this definitely has more of a, this is a social network, not just a place to update every once in a while. And obviously, Amber, as you and I have been talking about recently, it's clearly where LinkedIn is going. LinkedIn wants us to hang out on LinkedIn, you know, to have a tab open and visit several times a day, and it not just to be a place to connect to people that you might have done business with a couple of years ago. I don't know. It looks really different, but I like the look of it so far, at least the design.
Yeah, I think it looks good. I mean, I think they needed to make some improvements to the profile page. The reality is it really wasn't that robust. It was not very slick as well. I found the profile page in many respects to be just kind of dated and stale. I mean, you really can't do much with it. I'll give you an example. I recently was trying to do something in my bio where I added a link to my bio, and you couldn't even add a link in your profile section. So again, like I mentioned, just a little bit dated. So I think it looks better the way that they've done it now. I kind of hate when people roll out services and then you have to go on a waiting list and there's no news about when you'll be able to do it because it sort of loses that momentum. So that part of it is a little bit frustrating, but I think it is due time that they actually update the ability to have a profile that just looks a little more 2012 and a little less 2008.
I agree. I totally agree. And yeah, it's one of those situations where I always say LinkedIn is my resume. I mean, if anyone wants my resume, that's where they should go, you know, / Sarah Lane on LinkedIn. But it does look like a resume. I mean, in many ways, it's a little bit more, I mean, it's obviously more dynamic, but it looks like a website version of a paper resume for the most part. This new LinkedIn doesn't look anything like that, although the information is all still there. So it's a nice reimagining of keeping people up to date on, you know, your qualifications, your history, and what you want to do moving forward. So I look forward to using it. But I agree with you. It's a little frustrating to hear about a service that I've used for, I mean, the better part of 10 years, and I can't actually take advantage of the new profile that looks cool.
Yeah, and that, like I said, I think that part's totally frustrating. Now, it looks like the image is going to be a little bit bigger on the LinkedIn profile, which I think will be a good thing because the image is fairly small right now. So that part of it looks a little different too. So I wondered if they were taking cues from Twitter, how they now have the new expanded header and realize people want something more visual, because it does look more visual. But I think it's a move in the right direction. So we'll see if they allow more capabilities than just kind of changing content. I hope they do let you do things like, I'd love to be able to embed a YouTube video or links in different places. And I think that's the part that it's kind of missing.
Got another, this is really had nothing to do with LinkedIn. It's more about shopping. A new study shows that Pinterest is the place to be as far as people browsing and then turning into buyers of goods. It's interesting. This is a story from allfacebook.com. And the study is comparing Pinterest to Facebook as far as engagement of shoppers go. This is BizRate Insights who conducted the study. 69% of online consumers who visit Pinterest have found an item that they've bought or at least wanted to buy, compared to 40% of Facebook users. So, you know, Pinterest is a more reliable e-commerce conversation. I mean, if you're looking to sell goods or wares, it seems like Pinterest is more of a place to be. Also, the study found that a large percentage of people visit Pinterest over Facebook to get purchasing inspiration. So 70% of people said they went to Pinterest specifically to get inspiration about something, compared with 17% for Facebook. Amber, I don't know about you, but none of this surprises me. I don't know that I've ever gone to Facebook because I was looking to get inspired. It's more of a, I've got 15 minutes to spare, or I have to check up, on an event that I haven't RSVP'd to, or maybe I want to see if someone's online so I can chat with them. Not a place for inspiration.
No, it's actually so funny that you say that, because when I think about Facebook, you're right. The word I would not use for Facebook is inspiring. You know, I can think Twitter can be inspiring if you follow the right people. Pinterest can definitely be inspiring. So not a huge surprise. Although, Sarah, when I read this article, I was thinking back to an article we had recently about Pinterest that was talking about shopping and engagement. And I think that particular article, which I believe had some connection to Amazon, was saying how a lot of people didn't end up buying from Pinterest. Do you remember that story? This one seems to be a little bit almost the opposite of that.
Well, I think that is sort of two different things. Of the people who did end up buying from Pinterest, that still is dwarfing the numbers on Facebook. I think that's sort of the point of this. But then again, Facebook has so many more users, and obviously there are people who are just never going to be interested in using Facebook as far as purchasing anything ever. Pinterest has a much fewer user base. And, I mean, 63% of consumers have Facebook accounts, as far as people that are online. This is according to BizRate Insights. 15% have Pinterest accounts. So it is kind of interesting that so much of Pinterest is about inspiration, but also people who are inspired enough to make a purchase, which is pretty powerful inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, like many of the sites out there, hopefully they figure out a way to make money off that, and that will be a good thing for everybody, I think. Now, Sarah, this next article that you found on TechCrunch, this is, I think, a little bit frustrating. You know, we've talked about clout before, and we've kind of been like, it's, you know, an okay service, but you shouldn't really rate someone based on a number. And now this latest news from them takes this one step further, the idea almost of having a clout card.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yuck.
So yuck. Okay, so here's what's going on.
Yeah.
In iOS 6, for anybody who has upgraded to it, knows about Passbook. Passbook is, it's not really a digital wallet, but it's a way to have handy airline tickets or certain rewards cards. I talked about it on i5 a few episodes ago, where I have a Sephora card because, you know, I buy hair and makeup products from Sephora, and I use a rewards card, so I get free stuff every once in a while. I have my Sephora account now linked within Passbook on my iPhone, so that when I come near a Sephora store, it'll pop up and let me know that I'm nearby. Or when I'm in a Sephora store, then all I have to do, instead of take the little Sephora card out of my wallet, you know, my physical card, I can just show them the Sephora account on my iPhone. Let's see if I can get it up here. Just so if you have no idea what I'm talking about, I can show you. There you go. There's my little barcode. And then they scan, and my little points go up. And then when I get 1,000 points or something, maybe I get a free lipstick. I don't really even know of what I'm getting. But that's the idea behind Passbook. The idea behind clout on Passbook is the clout card. So the idea is that clout has updated its iPhone app to have Passbook support. So as a clout users, I can create a clout card which will live in Passbook and be dynamic. You know, if my clout score goes up, it will be reflected in my little clout card in Passbook. And the idea is to, like, show off my influence to get services and experiences from businesses. Now, you could think of this as, like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to flash my clout card. You know, if there's a 20-minute wait for a restaurant, and then I'll get seated immediately. No,
oh,
I don't think that's the idea. I think it's more of within clout, there are certain perks to, you know, if you have a clout score, I saw this recently, a clout score over a certain amount, you could get into, like, the special lounge at Virgin America or something at certain airports. I was like, I mean, I would totally leverage that if I was in that position. This would be an easy way to pull up that information, which is actually a legitimate, yeah, you know, this is a service that I can get if I have a certain score. Not so much just for bragging rights. But again, clout is just, it really is the ultimate bragging rights service. So I think this is a little bit silly. But then again, Passbook needs a little bit of love because there really aren't that many companies that are taking advantage of it yet. So at least they're being creative.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think in some respects, if it is a creative use of it, the whole idea of the clout card when you first hear about it is obviously just a horrible, horrible thing. You know, it just seems so unattractive to think about having your own card with your clout score on it. And I wonder if, in some ways, if maybe clout has to do some repositioning as far as expanding almost what the service is about. Because I think if you continue to talk about the service being attached to, oh, this is my score based on, you know, how much I interact online, I don't know how long they can continue to be around. But if they do expand a little bit and make it more around your activities and some of these rewards, they just have to position it a little bit differently, because I think it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But I would probably, like you said, use it too if the perks were good. I just don't think I would be flashing it all that much, because it just has that kind of sour feel to it.
You know, this is something that you might find interesting, because there's a little bit of a Toronto connection. A few weeks ago, Clout released the Clout Pass SDK, which means the partners can authenticate register users with Clout. And they had announced that 500px, which is a photo site and community based in Toronto, is the first partner to sign up with the Clout Pass SDK. So based on your Clout score, you can receive savings off of a premium 500px account, which, of course, isn't free, up to 100%. And that's the sort of thing where I actually, is it 500px or 500px? It's probably px.
I think px, yeah.
Probably, yeah. 500px, that's a great service. I've talked about it on iPad Today in the past because they have a really beautiful iPad app. So
yeah, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, when I see stuff like that, I go, I mean, I still hate to rate people based on Clout scores. But if it helps with a service that I already like, I guess that's positive.
Yeah, I mean, and when it's a digital service and it has some type of connection, I guess it does make sense. Maybe it's just the name that kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. The fact that it's called Clout, it just seems like, you know, it's just it's just not that appealing of a name. But I think with digital services, I think there's some neat opportunities there where it could open up some possibilities and people maybe use it more. Now, Sarah, I know you're a big Yelp user. You've talked about Yelp a bunch on the show before. I use it fairly regularly as well. It looks like there are some people who potentially could be getting in some trouble for using Yelp and possibly trying to buy reviews for their company. Let's say you're a restaurant, you went out there and you tried to buy a review and get someone to say something positive about you. You could be getting outed pretty soon.
Yeah, this is sort of like, I don't know, when you're written up in the local newspaper, you know, for getting arrested. Not that that has ever happened to me, but we all know how the local newspapers love to shame everyone publicly. This is, I guess, a little bit similar to that. For the next 3 months, Yelp profile pages that are associated with accounts that have been deemed to have written false Yelp reviews or misleading Yelp reviews, their profile pages will have a big consumer alert badge that says, "We caught someone red-handed trying to buy reviews for this business." And then potential customers will see the emails trying to hire a reviewer. So basically, the idea is like, okay, if I have a restaurant, right, and no one's really coming in, and I either have bad reviews or I have very few, and I say to Amber, listen, okay, I'll give you $20 if you come in, and you know, you say something nice. Here's some of the things I want you to say. You know, give me 5 stars. That sort of thing. And Yelp gets wind of it, then I, as a business, now get flagged as this is a shady business. Doesn't necessarily mean I have bad food, but it means that, you know, I'm not trustworthy. You know, this is just a shady deal. I think that as long as, I mean, I guess we've heard about fake Yelp reviews and sort of shady stuff going on with Yelp for years. And of course, in many cases, someone says, that's fake, and then the business goes, no, we didn't do anything. So there's always that gray area of, was it just a misunderstanding? You know, I would hate to think that somebody would get the finger pointed at them when they actually did nothing wrong. But the thing is that this really does happen, and I want less of this BS in Yelp altogether, because as you said, Amber, I love Yelp. I really, I use it. I take Yelp reviews to heart. I really do. I feel like I can weed out the crazy for the most part, or say, you know, this person hated this restaurant or hated this salon or whatever car dealership for a reason that just wouldn't bother me. So I can toss that aside. So, but those all have to, that assumes that these reviews are real, not actually fabricated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they have to do something about this. And I think we've talked about this on the show over the past few months. We had a great conversation a while ago about fake Twitter accounts. You know, for people who are really trying to game the system online when it comes to making yourself look better, the reality is there's an entire industry being created and there are lots of people trying to figure out how to debunk some of those fake reviews and fake profiles that are being created. So it's just a good idea to stay away from it. It's a messy world, so stay away from it altogether. And based on what this article says, the one on Mashable that talks about research firm Gartner saying that between 10 and 15% of social media reviews will be fake by 2014. It's good to see Yelp taking some action and doing something now today about it.
Gosh, you know, it's between fake followers on Twitter, fake reviews on Yelp, it's like, what a bunch of noise. You know, it's like our spam filters in our Gmail inboxes have gotten really, really good. You know, when I get spammed, yeah. I'm like, hey, look at that. But now it's just all over everything. I mean, it's the same nonsense. It's just in a different form.
Yeah, it's everywhere, right? And I think for so many businesses who depend on Yelp reviews, I mean, I go to a lot of businesses where they have the Yelp sticker in the front window at their establishment, and it just becomes such an important part of their brand. Obviously, they want to make sure that all of those reviews are legitimate. So I'm not sure exactly how Yelp is going to figure out which ones are the reviews that have been potentially bought or which companies have tried to ask for reviews from companies and want to pay them, but I would not want that job. I would not want to be wrong, because you can do a lot of damage to some of these businesses. But as a user, it's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. That's what it comes down to, right? It's like you want to use Yelp, you want to trust the service, and you don't want it to seem like you know, a bunch of junk. So I think that Yelp is, it's good that they're going on the offensive and just discouraging as much as possible any behavior that's not totally truthful and leaving it up to the users, because obviously that's how it was designed. Okay, we've got some. Well, we have quite a few tips and tricks and some upgrades and our Spotlight app of the week. But first, quick reminder: we do record the Social Hour live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And if you want to join us live, that's great. Thanks to everybody who's chatting in our chat room right now or watching us and providing feedback in real time on Twitter and emailing and all that good stuff. By the way, if you haven't emailed us before, we got a lot of emails this week, and we're going to get to some of those later on the show. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is how you can easily send feedback via email. But if you can't watch us live, don't worry about it, because you can always go to twit.tv/TSH and catch up with us there. That is where we are on demand, people, because although Twit is a live network, all of our shows can be viewed at your leisure. Episode 81, that was last week. That was a good one. We talked about all sorts of stuff. You can watch the video straight from the episode page. You can get links to anything that we talked about that you want to revisit. That's at the bottom of our page. We have all our handy-dandy links there, so that's a good read. Amber's Ratter fads and everything that we talk about there, because we don't want you to feel lost, and we go through a lot of stuff in every hour. So thanks to everybody who watches us live, who watches us after the fact, who says nice things about us on iTunes. We love you all. Keep at it. Okie doke, Amber, let's take a moment to thank SAP. They're our first sponsor on this episode of The Social Hour. Social media solutions from SAP is what we want to talk about. This is great. This is actually, it's so perfect for so many of the folks who watch this show. You know who you are, because many of you say, yeah, we want you, Amber and Sarah, talk more about a little bit about social media in the enterprise. You know, I work for a big company and I'm trying to figure out how to engage the best with all of our users in a social media presence sort of a way. The problem is that you've got people praising you socially and publicly. You also have people who might be angry at a company in a social way. They're talking about stuff. They're sending tweets. They're posting to Facebook. They're writing rants on their blog. It can be extremely overwhelming. That's why Social Media Solutions is got you covered. They've got a couple different components. They've got a listening component, and they have an engaging component. Obviously, the listening component is how you get all this information to the company. So people are talking about your company. There's certain relevant terms that you just want to flag, right? You want all of those terms to be delivered to you so that you can decide what to do with them. You know, if you keep seeing something over and over, you might say, well, this isn't really working for our company. Let's figure out how we're going to proceed. Or the opposite. Maybe something's working really well, and that can help you find out a little bit more about who's happy with your company and why. Helps you build better products, really, because you can incorporate real-time customer feedback into your efforts, your innovation efforts. Sentiment. The intensity of the sentiment. If somebody's really, really mad about something, you want to get a sense of that. if somebody's, again, happy about it, you want to get a sense of that too. This is how you grow your business, because of course, how the customers feel is everything, right? You can identify customers who are ready to buy based on certain signals. This is very big data of SAP that they send via social media. There's something that SAP uses. This is great. It's very smart robot stuff called natural language processing. And that's how they can tell the difference between a tweet like, I've never been angry at SAP before, meaning never, or I've never been as angry as I am at SAP right now, which means, yeah, you know, the word angry is in there, but it means two totally different things. Then the engaging component is how social media solutions helps you change the course of your company based on what you know. You can set rules about who gets what message, right? So if I'm not working in customer support, but I know the person who needs to see this particular tweet or blog post, I can get that routed automatically. Very, very helpful. If you manage the social media presence for large regional or national enterprises, you definitely want to get in touch with SAP. How do you do that? Go to sap.com/twit. Easy as that. They've got all sorts of information there. You can read up. You can figure out if this is a really good solution for your company. And if it is, let us know. We'd love to know who has looked into SAP and is happy with it and is incorporating it going forward. And thanks so much to SAP and Social Media Solutions for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Okie doke, Amber, we've got a death in the family.
Yes, Sarah, I always like to surprise you with a new name of a segment for the show. So this one is RIP Social Service, because you know what? More and more we're talking about little social services that we have grown to love or like over time, and then all of a sudden they're no longer available. This one is interesting. It's called Twistery, and as the headline says, a Twistery is now history. Basically, this little tool that's been around for 4 years, and I believe we've talked about it on the show, it would take all of your tweets and it would put them into a calendar. So you'd have a better sense of some of the tweets in terms of your history of interacting on Twitter. Well, they have to pull the plug on the service based on, as they mentioned on their site, some of the recent API restrictions at Twitter. Looks like they had more than 60,000 users. You know, quite a few people had depended on this service, but they are no more. I guess the good news is if you have an account, you pay for a pro account, it will be active for another couple of months and they're not going to bill you. So that's great. They'll let you export all of your data out of there. But RIP Twistery.
RIP indeed. This whole third-party app restrictions is killing them. Killing them softly, Twitter. And, you know, Twistery was not actually something that I used regularly. I wish I had known about it a while ago, because I do love the idea. This is, yeah. It seems like there are a lot of services that are trying to solve the issue of us throwing out data all over the place. There's photos, there's updates, there's tweets, there's you know, likes and comments. And, you know, if you were to ask me, when did you send that tweet? I just have no idea. But it's kind of interesting in a calendar context to go back and look at, you know, where you were when and what you were talking about. So it's unfortunate that this didn't continue. It sounds like the team, though, They all say it's partly because of Twitter's restrictions and partly because we've all got other stuff that we're doing. So hopefully nobody is out in the cold with nothing to do. They're probably all extremely talented and working on other cool projects.
Yeah, let's hope so. And if you hear about another death in the social media world, as far as a service out there that we've talked about or that we just haven't known about, but it's no longer, let us know, because it's fun to keep track of some of these just so you're aware of them. Now, Sarah, something that's been in the news lately that's kind of always in the news at some point is the idea of internet trolls, you know, people who are doing a lot of damage online, ruining people's reputations, whatever it might be. For our social tip this week, I came across this interesting article. It's a really simple article on business2community.com. The reason that I thought it was good, because like you mentioned, we have people calling in who are managing their own social media services, maybe for our social media accounts, maybe for a company, and they're wondering how to deal with negative feedback, and in some cases with people who would fall into the category of trolls. So there's four tips here that I think are great. The first one talks about tracking all of the complaints that have been done on social media channels. So keeping track of them, responding quickly in public. I think, you know, doing something that's pretty timely is a great idea to kind of nip things in the bud, staying positive publicly, not getting into any type of flame war, and dealing with details privately. One of the things I always recommend to clients or people who ask me this question, I get asked all the time, what do I do if someone's attacking my brand and writing stuff out there? And I always say, sometimes it's great to take that offline. So say you'll follow up with the person, maybe in a conversation, or you'll email them, just get it out of the social space. So this article has a few great tips. I don't know if you have any more, Sarah. I mean, this is an issue that is not going to go away. It's been going on for a long time.
It sure has. And I like to think that I'm pretty good about following the tips that this article outlines. And I agree absolutely that it's never losing your cool and sort of getting into some sort of a back and forth or something that could be considered a flame war is never going to make you feel better and can make you actually look worse, because it's like, it's never good. You know, you don't want to lose your cool in general. I actually had a situation, and this is just me, so it's not so much about protecting a brand, but I had somebody, they had tweeted, I'd like to listen to a tech show, a tech news show that's like Tech News Today, but doesn't have Sarah Lane in it. And the thing is that they ad replied me on Twitter. So it wasn't just that they had mentioned my name. They wanted me to see the tweet. And, you know, my initial reaction was like, oh, that's so rude. But I was actually curious as to why, you know. So I wrote back, and it was somewhat like a little bit of like a passive aggressive thing that I wrote back. But I was very positive and just was like, thanks for letting me know that, you know, you'd like to watch another show. Let me know which one you pick, you know, Happy Wednesday or something like that. And then, so there was a little bit of a back and forth, but I mean, I wasn't being rude and I wasn't trying to make it seem like it was that big of a deal, because it wasn't. You know, I can't please everybody all the time. But what ended up happening was the person said, do you want some constructive criticism? And I said, yes. And here's where you email me. And so he did, and he actually wrote a very nice, well-thought-out email that, you know, there were certain things that I, you know, had done on a show that he didn't like, and he had, I mean, this wasn't a crazy thing at all, and so I wrote him back, and then he said on Twitter, like, well, you know, that props to you for doing that, you know, that was really classy. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that he's ever going to like me more than he likes me on Tech News Today now, but it was like we came to a really civilized conclusion. And I think we both left it like, you know, we're both people. That was okay. I don't hold any ill will. And so that's just one of those situations where I'm like, you know, I'm glad that we decided to go the extra mile to just have a discourse that wasn't rude or insulting or made anybody feel bad.
Yeah, that's a great story. I mean, I actually have another story that I'll kind of shorten a little bit. I might have mentioned on the show before, but it was a really big brand. I was talking to their marketing director, and they had a similar experience with someone who was kind of, you know, just poking the bear a little bit, you know, and saying some things about the company. And what the marketing director did, which I thought was genius, is he actually ended up calling up this, it ended up being a kid, but he got in touch with the kid, he emailed and then had a phone call with him and asked him what his problem was with the brand. And the kid had some really valid feedback. And then eventually what happened, I think 6 months later, is this VP of marketing got the kid involved in the next social media campaign that they did. So I think you're right. You know, sometimes it may hurt or maybe sting a little bit, but if you're open and the criticism is good, it's a great idea maybe to engage in a conversation in another form, not necessarily on social media sites. It's not always going to work out, but sometimes it does.
That's true. I mean, there have definitely been situations where I tried to win somebody over, you know, and they just did not want it, you know, and it's like that happens too, you know, and yeah. then there are the times where you kind of go, you know, it's better just to walk away than to expel too much energy on somebody that is just never going to be converted. So yeah, it's a case by case basis, but in general, I think it's good to go offline if there's a problem to solve or at least some feelings to get out. It can be really worth it, and you end up making a friend or converting somebody to your brand that you know wasn't going to be otherwise.
Yep, I agree. Works out well. I guess we have an upgrade next, Sarah, and I didn't even know about this one.
Yeah, this is great. Okay, so here's a situation that I run into constantly on Instagram. So Instagram is, photo sharing app. I have it on my iPhone, use it daily, Android as well, and BlackBerry? Well, anyway, I am not really sure about that part. But the problem is that there are Twitter users who have a specific username on Twitter that don't have the same name on Instagram. You know, like Veronica, for example, Veronica Belmont, who's had a Twitter handle forever, is at Veronica on Twitter. On Instagram, she's Veronica Belmont. Well, I know that just because, I don't know, it's in my head. But it would be very easy for me to just tag at Veronica on Instagram. Then what ends up happening is it's not the right person on Instagram. But what if then I send that Instagram to Twitter? Then the Instagram username doesn't apply to the Twitter user. And it's just a mess. I've got a few friends like that where it's like they're constantly looking at this other person's profile to see, you know, how they've been mistagged. Here's how it's going to work now. Instagram has updated their blog and a post just a couple of hours ago who says, for photos shared on to Twitter, Instagram now translate the at mentions for users whose Twitter name and Instagram name differ. So if the mentioned user has connected Instagram to Twitter, which I have, that's how you would share with Twitter, the user's Instagram name will appear in the photo caption. The user's Twitter name will appear in the tweet. And Instagram knows that because you've connected your two services. Perfect. If the mentioned user has not connected Instagram to Twitter, the user's Instagram username will appear in the photo caption. The at sign will be removed from the username when shared with Twitter, which, I mean, that takes away a link, but it still doesn't link to the wrong username on Twitter. So this is sort of, it's one of those, it's like a little thing, but it actually makes Instagram, it cuts down on a lot of people saying, what? I don't understand. Who is that? I don't know that person. Why are you with them?
Because yeah, that happens to me all the time.
Yeah, because we don't all have the same names on most social networks. I always try to get Sarah Lane everywhere I go, just so I cut down on this issue. Mostly because at Sarah is never, ever available anywhere because too many of us. But if I did have multiple usernames in different places, this would be an issue.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I mean, I have a couple of friends who are really active, like you said, on Instagram and have different names. So on Twitter. So I think it makes a ton of sense. Now, Sarah, speaking of Twitter, for our spotlight this week, and I can't wait to hear your rant because I agree with you and I know what you're going to mention about this service off the top. But I was reading an article about a new service that people are saying, hey, is this the new Twitter? And it's called Feed, and that's Pheed. I signed up for Feed. Kind of fun. You know, you can post instant audio clips or video clips or text messages. The thing that makes it different than Twitter and some other services is that you can charge for access to your content. So let's say you're a celebrity or well-known personality and you think your content's really great. You can actually charge a fee for some of that content for live broadcast. So it allows people, individuals, it kind of empowers them to be able to get money for content they push out there. Now, I think the service is actually neat, like I mentioned, but Sarah, your first experience was kind of like mine, and I'm going to throw it over to you because really frustrating. I can't believe they did this.
Feed. So I had a little bit of I unleashed a rant this morning because we also covered this on TNT on Tech News Today this morning. So Feed was something that I signed up for. I signed up for everything, especially any social network that rolls out, Amber, because we cover most of them on the show, and I figure, you just got to have an account, see what the experience is like, because we have to talk about this stuff. That's what I did with Feed first thing this morning, because somebody had tweeted about it, or maybe I saw it on TechMeme or something. So I thought, oh, yeah, next Twitter, I don't know. I'll decide that for myself. So I went ahead, and when I signed up for Feed, I went ahead and signed in with Twitter. I usually do that when I get the choice between Facebook and Twitter. I could have signed up with my email address instead, but Twitter's easy, and that way I can easily import friends based on my Twitter friends. We all know how this works. So I went ahead and did that, and like not very many of my Twitter friends were on Feed, so it wasn't very helpful. What I didn't realize was that it had then auto-posted to Feed, hey, just set up my Feed stream. Check it out. feed.com/Sarah Lane to Twitter. Now, this is the surefire way to get me to hate your whatever it is. Anything that you build, if it auto-posts to Twitter without me explicitly saying, please do this, and especially without me being able to change what it actually tweets, I hate you. And so I hate Feed. I mean, from this point forward, I'm like, I wash my hands of this. You screwed me over within 5 minutes of me knowing about your service. And that's just unforgivable. It should not happen. That's so stupid. It's so spammy. We talk about, you know, spam on social networks. This is one of the worst forms of spam. It's just, it's rude. That's no way to get users. However, I do think that you're right, Amber. It is somewhat of an interesting business model in general, if you kind of just take away the anger out of this. If I'm a celebrity, for example, I mean, they mentioned celebrities like Paris Hilton and Miley Cyrus and Chris Brown. Ooh, people I really want to follow on Feed. But let's say that I really am into them. Or let's say that for whatever reason, I thought that I could charge a little bit of money for a live event, you know, a live video chat session once a week or something. I don't think that's a horrible idea. I mean, if you can get some money and you don't mind splitting it 50-50 with Feed, which is how their business model works, that's interesting. The whole thing just seems slimy to me. I don't know. I just got such a bad first impression.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like you, I like the service. I think the idea of the charging is kind of interesting. The spammy nature of it, I couldn't believe it. I think they even tweeted out when I had followed someone on Feed. I followed a friend of mine. I noticed she had just joined. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at my Twitter feed. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you're sharing all of this stuff automatically. What a stupid move. Haven't you learned anything? Because in social media, you've seen other services do this. And of course, there's huge backlash. People hate that. I wrote them a comment on Twitter just a little while before the show, just to try to encourage them to not make those things by default as far as sharing when people sign up and you follow people. I hate all this stuff. So I went into my settings and actually unclicked all of those different things. But it's just a dumb move. Hopefully they do change it, because it will kill the first time experience for a ton of people. I feel like I'm going to be a little bit forgiving for the next couple of days until they change it, because I'm sure they're going to, right, Sarah?
I think you're absolutely right. It's a lot of this, I think, is more of an oversight of social etiquette, really, more than a let's do this, you know, because nobody would launch a service hoping to get the reaction that they got from us. That's just silly. It's more of a, well, this would be a good way to get the word out, because all of a sudden everyone's going to be pimping out their new personalized Feed permalinks, right? User profiles. So it's just the wrong way to go about it. I mean, it's a very rookie move. And yeah, you're right. If they correct some stuff, this could be a very compelling service. I'd like to know who's going to make money off of it besides celebrities, but I don't know. Maybe it's for celebrities.
Yeah, you know, maybe people will figure out an innovative way to be able to make that money. But I think the idea of charging for content, we've seen this. We talked about comedians doing this, about how people are more open to the idea of maybe paying for content. We saw with the rumble between Jon Stewart and Bill O'Reilly recently how you had to pay for that. It didn't work all that great. But nonetheless, I think that this is just a natural extension of people's viewing experiences and reading experiences and sharing, is that maybe you're going to have to pay for some of this content. And I think people are open to it in small bite-sized pieces. So we'll see what happens with them. We'll keep an eye on them, and hopefully they change that. Sarah, just quickly, I want to mention that we have someone in New Zealand who has just tweeted us to let us know that they're watching The Social Hour on the big screen. And when he says big screen, he means it, because he just took a picture and shared it. And I'm kind of horrified because I feel like I haven't brushed my hair, but you look fantastic in the picture, Sarah.
Oh, please. All right, let's look at this.
You look
tweet.
Good.
All right, hold on. There we go. Oh, my God. Very nice. Gosh, really? That's an intense Feed conversation right there. Woo!
Yeah, that's an intense look, Sarah.
Very intense. Well, you know, this is a very serious show, Amber, and I want to be taken seriously as an investigative journalist. That is from Invervegas down in New Zealand. Thank you for tweeting us.
Thank you so much.
You have a very nice television. Okie doke. Yeah. And again, that's P-H-E-E-D rather than feed, because feed is such a generic term. And I know it gets a little bit confusing. But in short, I do not think that feed is the next Twitter, Forbes magazine. That was their article headline that I wrote, that I read this morning. But definitely, you know, check it out for yourself. Make sure you go into your settings and you uncheck any of this posting to social networks, unless you actually do want them to do that, if you decide to proceed. But if for some reason you love feed, or you think we're crazy, or there's some sort of use for feed that we haven't covered, please do let us know. You can get a hold of us again on Twitter. You can write the social hour at twit.tv. Record a video. Make your own rant. That's all good. We'll take it all.
Yeah, do it.
All right, before we get into some of your viewer feedback, speaking of, let's take a moment to thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love Ford. I mean, Leo has like 90 Ford cars. Well, no, that's not true. He has one. But he's always talking about getting another Ford car because he gets so excited about all the stuff, all the technology, all the cool kind of gadgetry, very, very futuristic stuff that's going into Ford cars, like Available Sync, which helps you control your media player with simple voice commands. I mean, talk about living in the future. So here's how the entertainment features of Sync work. You have browsing capabilities. So you can browse your music collection by genre, by album, by artist, playlist, song titles, whatever, just all by using voice commands. You know, you want to play a certain song, you say so, and Sync goes off and running. As far as playlists, you can voice activated control your media player. So if you say something like, play my Dead Mouse album, or you're kind of into that, but you're interested in something else, it's almost like a, you know, an internet radio type of capability. So I could say, play something similar to this. You can listen to your entertainment, all of your favorite stuff, on a lot of devices. You've got voice-controlled music on your smartphone, on a USB drive, on an MP3 player. I mean, this is all stuff that Sync can take advantage of. And then there's iTunes tagging. So if you heard a song, Available Sync with MyFord Touch and HD radio technology uses iTunes tagging, so you can hear a song, then you can transfer the info to your iPod as you're hearing it, and then you can purchase the song from iTunes at a later time, because of course you're driving, right? So it's like, you can't do all that now, but we all know how frustrating it is to hear a song and to be like, I want to save this, how do I do it? I don't know, I can't open up an app and Shazam, blah. So that's where iTunes tagging really, really comes in handy. Just go save, and then you deal with it later, and then you have that song that you love, and you make your day, right? This is all just some of the options that Ford Sync gives you. So really, really, really cool. Hands-free, voice-activated. It's sold on every 2012, 2013 Ford vehicle sold in the USA, like the 2012 Ford Focus, which Leo is always telling me that he's about to buy. And he's, who knows? He had the day off yesterday, so maybe he'll come back to Petaluma with a Ford Focus tomorrow. You can learn more about everything that Ford is doing, all the technologies that Ford's bringing to its vehicles at ford.com/technology. We talk about this URL quite a bit, but there is a lot of information there. I mean, if you are in the market or you're just interested in what Ford is doing and how they're really, really at the forefront, the future of automobiles and what you can put in them and how you can use them, do go to ford.com/technology. I think you're going to be really impressed. Okay, Amber, shall we go to our very first email of the week?
Yeah, so this email is from Mike, and Mike says, I was surfing around the web and ran across Privacy Fix. It's an extension that is said to help manage your privacy settings. I was wondering what your thoughts are. I did not install the extension, but I did go to their website and check out Privacy Fix, and I watched their little how-to video. The idea is basically it helps you manage your privacy settings on Facebook and Google by presenting all of the settings that you currently have in place and just giving you a better insight into what those current settings are, and also what companies are tracking you and a bunch of other information. I think this looks neat, Sarah. I mean, I think a lot of people would be able to use this.
Absolutely. This is Privacy Fix, where privacyfix.com. I went ahead and installed the Chrome extension. So what we are seeing right now is my specific settings on a variety of places that I visit online. So, for example, I'm on my Facebook tab right now, and Privacy Fix is telling me my profile is indexed in Google. Now, that's not necessarily a problem, but if it was, I could have the opportunity to go ahead and fix it. So if I click fix, this is where then a Privacy Fix will dump me over to the area on Facebook where I can disable public search if I so desire. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty helpful. If I go back and see what some of my other options are, in posts and likes, non-friends can see my posts. That's okay, because a lot of my posts are public by design. I'm a pretty public person on Facebook, but not everybody is. Now, here is something that I have decided I did not want. I don't want Facebook to display my name and image and like in ads that are shown to my friends when I like something. I've said, don't do that. So this is something that if I had not already fixed, Privacy Fix would tell me, you might really want to look at that. You know, this is probably something that it doesn't seem like something that you want to do. So you get the idea. If you go over to the Google tab, same idea. Now, here's what's kind of cool is that in Google Plus, my profile is blocked from searches. Now, this is by default. Your Google Plus profile can be seen in Google search results, which helps others connect with you. You can block your profile from being indexed in search results. Now, this is actually not something that I necessarily want. Why would I want to be blocked in search results? You know, because it is my choice, after all. Sometimes people want utmost privacy. Sometimes people want to be more visible. So I could kind of go like, well, maybe I can go back into my Google Plus settings and tweak them a little bit so that I am not blocking myself from search results if I want a lot of people to see my Google Plus page. So I really like this. Privacy Fix is pretty much just a, listen, this is what your privacy settings are in a variety of places. Here's a helpful way to change them if you're not happy with what you see. But I think more information about what we're sharing and why and who's tracking us, by the way. I'll just show you one other thing that's kind of crazy. If I go to my tracking bar, here are tracking cookies that are present on a variety of sites that I have engaged with. And Amber, I've never heard of any of them. Like Exhalate Media and Experian and Exponential and iReturn and Facilitate Digital and, well, Federated Media I've heard of. Fetchback, Flash Talking, Freewheel, GAO, Game Advertising. I mean, these are all, these are our trackers. These are companies that are in business of tracking my information, tracking all of our information, and I have the opportunity to decide who I'm going to engage with. So it's just good to be a little bit more aware of, I guess, how your privacy settings affect you on the internet.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool tool. I mean, I'm going to look into it a little bit more, but would probably recommend it to people because I know we've talked about this before, but a lot of people don't understand some of the settings, particularly in Facebook, and they don't know what they have turned on or turned off. So thank you so much for that, Mike. It's great to see that all highlighted in one place.
Yeah, absolutely. We got another email from Sam, the Smith Sam on Twitter. He says, I read an article about a UK cable service, Virgin Media, who is going to launch an iPad app to go along with their TiVo set-top box. It allows you to view live TV, schedule recordings, manage your DVR all from your iPad. What I'm sure is interesting to you is the social aspects of the app. The article mentions that the social integration isn't groundbreaking, but I'm wondering if it actually needs to be. Do your Twitter followers really need to know that you're watching The Office? And even if they do, most people will tweet their thoughts on a show through their favorite Twitter client while reading what others are saying about it. So the best way for Virgin to integrate social into this app is to incorporate some kind of Twitter stream where its users can see what others are saying about the show. This is something that ZBox already does. That's another second screen app. What do you guys think about social media working with live TV? We have touched on some of these services. There are a lot of them. And I don't know. I think the jury's still out on whether we really need personalized apps that are supposed to be run in conjunction with what we're watching on live TV. Because I think to Sam's point, what I end up doing is, for example, tonight I'm going to watch a baseball game. You know, the Giants, my team, they're in the playoffs. That's definitely something I'm going to be watching live. And I'm going to have my phone or my tablet in front of me, and I'm probably going to be tweeting about it, and I will see anyone else who's also tweeting about the game. And that's sort of all I need to do because I can create my own experience. You know, I don't have to open up a Major League Baseball app that helps me meet other people in real time who are also watching the game. That might be helpful, but I always see these kind of these apps that try to control what you're doing while you're distracted from your live TV. And I think, I don't know, I don't think that's the point of being distracted.
Yeah, I mean, I think for live programs, I think sometimes it does work well. I mean, as we've watched some of the presidential debates or the vice presidential debates in the U.S., I love the idea of engaging while a live event like that is going on. So I think in some cases it makes sense just to have that ongoing kind of commentary and the interaction and everything. I just don't think it makes sense for everything. You know, I think there's a time and a place for it, and I don't think it's all of the content that you would ever be watching. I think it's a very select amount of content. But I think this is kind of the way things are going. I don't know. I feel like my attention span is so bad these days. It's really poor. Like, I almost cannot watch something on TV without interacting on some type of device. And so I would probably use something like this, but I don't think that's a reflection necessarily a good habit to have. But I think things are just going this way. I think, you know, television people are all about the social TV experience, and it's just going to be more integrated as time goes on.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of these second screen apps, and if you haven't heard that term before, the idea is that you've got, you know, your primary screen, which is your TV that you're watching, but then you've also got this other screen that's taking up a lot of your attention. And you know, you've got a lot of marketers going, well, okay, let's see, how can we get their attention back on us? Well, we can't make their, you know, computer run out of batteries, so let's create something so that they're looking down at their screen, but it's still us somehow, you know, and our advertisers can, you know, pay into the second screen. So that's how I see a lot of these services. I don't mean that they're all bad. I enjoy certain apps like GetGlue, for example, where I can check into, you know, watching something like the Oscars, where I know a lot of other people are going to be watching it, and you kind of join the gang a little bit. But it's definitely an area that's still fleshing out. And, you know, I don't think that we've seen something perfectly executed yet.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Our next message is from, our feedback is from someone on Twitter, from Mike Schulman, who points us to a site called tagboard.com. Now, I hadn't heard of Tagboard before he mentioned this. It looks like a really cool service. When you first go to the homepage of Tagboard, you have the option to go in and enter a hashtag and search for that hashtag. They call themselves a social media hub for hashtags. I just did a hashtag HPX 2012. That's the conference that I'm at. And then all of a sudden, I can see images from the conference, messages on Twitter, Instagram pictures, messages on Facebook. And it's a really different way to be able to look at information from a particular event. So this looks like a really neat, handy little service. It reminds me a little bit of Epilogger. A friend of mine has a service called Epilogger that does something kind of similar. But I love these. Anywhere you can kind of take a bunch of information and make it one fluid experience. And it seems like Tagboard does just that.
Yeah, I Epilogger, we featured on the Social Hour some time back. I think it was around...
Oh, yeah, he came on.
Yeah. I think it was around the first of the year. I don't know. I'll have to go back and look at what episode that was. I think it was January-ish. If memory serves, I don't know. It all runs together after a few months. But this is, tagboard.com. Alex in the background had just did a little search for I Love Cake. And what's great about Tagboard, which I love, and yes, this is not the only service that tries to make some sense of hashtags, but for a while, hashtags were something that people did on Twitter. It was, you know, whether it's a funny hashtag or a hashtag that's illustrative of an event that you're participating in at the time, or people can filter via the hashtag, or you just make it very obvious what you're talking about. It can provide context. Hashtags are great, but you also see hashtags on a lot of other services now. A hashtag is just really a way to say, I'm almost branding my update with something. Not that it has to be associated with a corporate brand, but giving it some context. You have hashtags on Facebook, on Instagram, pretty on Google+. I mean, there's all sorts of places. So I like the idea of Tagboard. If I was to search the Social Hour, right? We've got people who are tweeting about our show, but it's also very helpful to see who is tweeting the social hour when it has nothing to do with us, so that you get an idea of, okay, well, what does the social hour mean to a lot of other people, especially if you're trying to figure out some brand recognition options. Right now, it looks like, for the most part, we got a lot of Get Glues actually in here that are watching the social hour. But then we've got somebody who's doing some sort of the social hour event that's associated with Google Plus. I don't think that has anything to do with us. We've got some folks who were talking about the social hour as actually getting together and I don't know, having a little bit of a party with some wine and some hats. And
fine.
Yeah, so it's like, even though some of those aren't actually relating to us, I think that's actually kind of helpful because it lets me know what people associate the name of our show with. And also, these cute little, what's this here? There's somebody made this little collage of us.
Aww.
Yeah. Well, this is actually
moments, Sarah. Those are moments.
Moments, yeah. Some of our best moments. It looks like it's pictures of us sort of sneezing and then looking sort of smug, whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I like this. I like the discovery sense of tag board. And of course, you could look up something that was breaking and get a much better idea of, besides Twitter, you know, where are people talking about this event or something that happened. So tag boards, good stuff.
Good stuff. Thank you so much for that. Next up, we have our campaign spotlight of the week. We promised to feature more social media campaigns that we thought were good, bad, or ugly. This one is just really simple. There's not a lot of controversy around it. I just thought it was kind of cute. You know, in social media, if you're running a campaign for an organization, sometimes you have to do something to stand out, and this is a perfect example of this. Ocean Spray has done a campaign in New York City where they actually created a cranberry bog with a ton of cranberries and actual farmers in the bog who are answering questions. And this is in the middle of New York City. Obviously, it's a temporary thing that has been put there. It's 1,500 square feet filled with 2,000 pounds of cranberries, according to the Mashable article. And just a fun way to get people engaged, taking pictures, having fun with it. So I think an example of a creative solution to get people to talk about your brand. Something that's just kind of fun. No controversy.
No, really. No. Smart. And when you're talking about cranberry juice, why should there be, you know?
Why should there be? What's the problem, right?
Yeah.
It's all good.
I'm
so
into
that's
that.
Just a fun example.
There's somebody thinking outside the box, right?
Yes, exactly. Literally.
Right. Truly, yes. They're outside. They're out. Ocean Spray. That's good.
Cranberries.
Yeah. You go, Ocean Spray. Gosh, you know, we've got your rad or fad coming up, Amber. But first, I want to remind everybody, we had a lot of feedback from you all this week, and we want more and more and more because it helps us make a better show, and it helps you be part of the show as well. So reminder, the social hour at twit.tv is our email address. Our voicemail is 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626 SOCIAL. It's our Google Voice number, so just leave us a message. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less, and we'll try to play it in a future show. You can, of course, record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link. You can tweet us. You can take pictures of us on Instagram. We will then find it. I mean, your options are almost limitless. They do have limits, but you know, there are a lot of ways that you can get a hold of us. So thanks to everybody who helped us make this episode of The Social Hour. Before we get to Amber's Rad or Fad, want to thank Audible.com. They're our third and final sponsor of this fabulous show. If you're not familiar with Audible, you are missing out, buddy, because it is the leading provider of audiobooks. When I say leading, they're leading by many miles because they have over 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of books. I mean, anything you can think of, Audible probably has it. Fiction books, nonfiction books. If you're like, fiction, it's not even real. I have friends who are just not interested in fiction, not interested in reading a novel, but really, really like biographies and nonfiction stories where they feel like they learn about the world, or vice versa. People you want to escape. You know, fiction is your thing. That's how I feel. I love fiction because I can kind of get out of my own head and let my imagination run wild. But are you reading all the time? Do you have time to do a lot of reading? Because I don't, but I do have a lot of time to listen to audiobooks, and that's why audiobooks are so great. They're an absolute saver. If I'm in a book club and I have to get through a book and I'm just busy, I can listen to an audiobook while I'm in transit, while I have my long commute, while I'm at the gym, while I'm walking to the grocery store, while I'm making dinner. I mean, while I'm folding laundry, the list goes on. There are so many opportunities to get through books and have a lot of fun doing it by listening to an audiobook where the book is told to you. Sometimes the author narrates their own book, which is really cool. You know, if you've got an author that you really like, you really respect, that's just an added bonus to hear the book in their voice. Sometimes they're narrated by people who've got these, you know, these great voices, you know, these really cool narrators. Sometimes they're narrated by multiple people. So you almost get, it's almost like a theatrical play type of a thing. It's really, really awesome. It's a very, very enhanced experience of a book. What's cool is that Audible is offering a free audiobook if you want to try it out, just to try out their service. So not only do you try it out, but you get a free book out of it. In fact, Brandon Sanderson's Legion is a book that we all here at TWIT think that you might really like. It's absolutely free. Audible.com/Sanderson. So that's audible.com/SANDERSON is where you can learn a little bit more about the book, learn a bit more about who narrated it. You can even hear a little excerpt to get a sense of what is it going to sound like. You know, let's go ahead and play that.
My name is Stephen Leeds, and I am perfectly sane. My hallucinations, however, are all quite mad.
Ooh, I love it already. Oh, this is going to be good. That's Brandon Sanderson's book, Legion. If you haven't heard about it, please do check it out. What you do is you go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. When you are ready to download Legion, or another audiobook of your choice, audiblepodcast.com/socialhour to get that free audiobook. Get started, try it free for 30 days, get your free book. You do not have to give it back, by the way. It's an audiobook that is yours to keep, and we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, I'm ready for some Rad or Fad. What about you?
Okay, this one is just—it's just kind of silly, Sarah. I don't even know what to say about it. It's a little bizarre. It's a service that I stumbled across called Taploid, kind of like tabloid. And basically, what you can do with this service is you can turn your Facebook feed into almost like a gossip magazine. So you sign in with your Facebook account, and then the service will turn all of the really juicy and gossipy updates into, like I said, like a digital magazine that you can then see all of the, I don't know if it's just inappropriate or all of the drama that's happening in your Facebook universe.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. So an article by Digital Trends, I actually really liked this article because I thought that the author, Nat Gurren, was pretty honest about how she felt about it. That the idea is that, okay, so if Amber gets a new job well, I don't want to use you as an example, Amber, because I know you don't have like a really super drama-filled life. But if one of my friends gets engaged, let's say, or gets, you know, decides to break up, and some of the people choose to post that stuff publicly on Facebook, you know, you get a lot of like people saying, "Oh no, that's terrible," or "Yay, congrats," or you know, that sort of stuff. It's kind of life events. The idea behind Taploid is that it sort of just turns the natural language of it all into something that reads like a tabloid. So like, oh no, Splitsville, Sarah and so-and-so are no more. What did he do wrong? That kind of thing. I don't like this idea. I think I think this is, and Alex, I think you showed a little picture that, by the way, I would show you what my own Facebook feed looks like, but Amber, you and I both tried to sign up for the service, and it's like it's going to take a while for them to send
us anything.
I don't know
what's going on. Yeah.
So that's not actually anything that is live for me right now. But the idea is like, okay, Owen Thomas hanging out with the wrong crowd. I actually know Owen Thomas. He used to write for Ballywag, so this seems like right up his alley. But I wonder, it's like, well, what's that about? Is it because he checked in with a few people that, like, maybe I'm not friends with? So Taploid would turn that into, a silly article about him being friends with people that, like, I just don't get why I would want my life to look like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to put this into the category of a big fat fad. I don't think this is a service you're necessarily going to hear about for a long time. If they want to grab headlines, it looks like they're doing just that. A lot of people talking about the service, that maybe it's a fun, quirky idea. But, you know, I think, like I said, I just think it's a bit of a fad. And I'm not sure that this would be something that's going to have a whole lot of stickiness to it, Sarah.
And really, why does anyone want more tabloid anything?
Oh, there's enough in the world. Exactly.
You know, I mean, this is like, sometimes it's, I don't know, maybe at the gym, you know, maybe like if I'm getting a manicure, I can be seen thumbing through the latest Us Weekly because it's sitting right there. And I mean, I'm embarrassed. It's like, you know, I'm kind of looking and I'm like, this is so bad. You know, it's just like such garbage. It just, I don't know. I would never want to want that into something that's actually personal to me, which would be
exactly
my Facebook feeds. You know?
Yeah,
it's
I agree
just,
with you.
It's just like, it makes us bad people. No, tabloid, no.
Like, then you want to take a shower after.
Exactly. Then again,
dirty.
We haven't seen it, you know, in action on a personal level. So, you know, let's revisit this. When we each get, because I think it's an email digest that's sent to you. It's not like you're going to a website and this is public stuff. It's something that's personalized. So maybe we can look through our first digests and see if maybe there's more to it. Maybe it's funnier than we think it's going to be, or maybe it actually turns into something that's useful. So I don't want to say this thing is a joke. It'll never go anywhere, but looks like a fad.
Yes.
First impression.
Like a fad.
First impression.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what it looks like when we actually get it. Maybe we'll be hooked, Sarah, but somehow I highly doubt it.
I kind of doubt it, too. Well, Amber, we've come to the end of our hour. That is it for this edition of The Social Hour. Remember, we're live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Thanks to everybody who watches us live. And thanks even more, well, thanks equally to everybody who watches us on demand. You actually, if you watch us on demand, you get little extras. Like, you know, we have little URLs at the bottom of the screen and a lot of stuff that we don't actually put into the show live. So you're watching the raw, uncut version of The Social Hour. We actually don't really cut anything out. But we do add, you know, some graphics and some music and things like that after the fact. So, hey, you know, if you always watch us live, maybe download the show and see if you like it better enhanced. I don't know. We don't care. Just thanks for everybody for supporting us each week. Amber, are you going to be back in the T-Dot next Friday?
I think I am, actually. I'm pretty sure that I am. Yes, I am going to be back next Friday. I think I'm in Toronto for most Fridays for the next couple of months, except when I'm in San Francisco, Sarah, to meet up with you.
Yay!
And that's going to be glorious.
I'm just so excited. It's going to be awesome.
It's
really
going
to be awesome. Everyone who's like, geez, you guys are really excited about that. We are excited. We would be excited anyway, but it'll be the first time that Amber and I meet IRL. So after years of working together, we will actually see each other face to face. Who knew it was possible?
Who knew it was going to happen? But it is.
Yes.
It's awesome. So, yes, I will see you in a few weeks. And other than that, I'll be back in Toronto for the rest of the shows for the next couple months.
Sounds good. Thanks to everybody for watching. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber McCarthy. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.